Real estate. Well, we've been concentrating on securities, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and the like. But real estate is a viable investment alternative. However, I like to say real estate is tricky, which is a kind way of saying that real estate is a royal pain in the. Do you remember the PETA factor? Pain in the factor with mutual funds? Once you've chosen your mutual fund, there's nothing else you need to do. You just make sure the $50 or $100 goes into the account every month, either through your checking account or your payroll. But real estate, no, dear students, real estate it's another job. It's a whole lot more work than studying stocks, to be truthful. But it can be very, very profitable. So let us do our best to wrap our arms around an entire world of real estate, realizing that you really can't learn it in a classroom. We even teach real estate classes, and they teach you stuff that really isn't that useful. The best way, in my humble opinion, is to actually get out there, maybe take a job somewhere in the real estate industry as an escrow agent or an appraiser or a better yet, a property manager, because that's what you would be doing as a real estate investor, being your own property manager. There are two different types of real estate investments: direct real estate investments and indirect. And mostly people think of the direct investments. You're the owner. You hold title to the property down at the county courthouse or the admin building or the city building. Your name is on the title. Your home is a real estate investment. Now, in my humble opinion, it's a home first, an investment second. Other people tend to disagree, but that's why there's coffee and tea, and some people like cocoa. Your vacation home is treated in a certain way by the IRS and is yet another rental investment. I mean, a real estate investment, but rental property is what we normally discuss when we discuss real estate. And that's a whole course unto itself that really shouldn't be taught at a school. It should be taught in the milieu. There's that word I used again before. It should be taught in the environment of working with real estate. The biggest gains can be made on undeveloped land. But folks, don't do it. Don't make it your first investment. Don't make it your second real estate investment. Be in the industry for many years before you start investing in dirt, because there's no cash flow. You still have to pay the property taxes, and there's no guarantee that you're going to be able to develop the land. But that's where the tremendous sums of money can be made in developing undeveloped land. But it's not for you or me, okay? It's for people who have been in the industry for many years and I know exactly what they're doing. And then for those of us who don't want to be a landlord, there are ways that we can invest in real estate without owning title to the property. And those are called indirect real estate investments. There is a type of stock. It's not really a stock, but it looks like a stock to you and me, who have been trained in how to understand stocks and all the verbiage that goes along with them. And they're called REITs, which is a great name, REIT, isn't it? Real Estate Investment Trusts. And these are essentially mutual funds that invest in real estate as opposed to stocks or bonds. And they're actually one very good alternative for you if you want to be a real estate investor, but don't want to be a landlord, or don't have the tremendous sum of money you need to come up with for a down payment. The real estate syndicates and limited partnerships, well, they've sort of put on the back burner by the 1986 Tax Reform Act that separated passive and active income. But again, for the right investor, they may be for you. People who have a lot of money to invest in huge amounts of income often will take a look at low-income housing, because you get certain tax credits. And so, again, that's not for the vast majority of investors. You may decide that you want to do an equity share. Now, these things are actually very cool, and we talk about them in depth in the chapter on Housing and Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management. Why? Because this is an opportunity for the typically older couple or grandparents or parents who have some money to invest, and the younger single person or couple that wants to buy a starter home, because the hardest thing is that getting that down payment. In an equity share, you as the investor come up with the down payment, and then a couple or an individual buys the home or condominium and then makes the payments. And as the price of the rental, I'm not, the price of the real estate rises, you get to share in the equity. Now, it's often done within a family. It doesn't have to be, but make sure you get a good real estate attorney to write up all the documents, because that can get real ugly unless it's all written down. How are you going to share in the appreciation? How long is there a time frame to when the owner of the property who's living in the property needs to buy you out, refinance, and pay you off? Now, you, dear students, can play the role of the mortgage company by investing in what are called first or second trustees or first or second mortgages. You are the loaner. You're playing the part of the bank. It's also called hard money, and with a good reason. These people can't get a loan at the bank or the credit union, so they come to you, the hard money lender, and are willing to pay 7, 8, 9, 10 or more percent, when mortgages these days are going for 3%. Now, I always took a dismal view of these, because obviously if somebody is unable to get a loan at a bank or a credit union, that's not a good sign, dear students. But I was pleasantly, amazingly surprised at a local company, FHL Corp. And one of the people came and spoke to our investment club, and she's a dynamo. She and the company look for first trustees, always a first trustee, never a second. A second trustee is like a home equity line of credit. It gets paid off after the first trustee. And they have found very qualified borrowers who, for whatever reason, can't get a loan at a bank or a credit union, and have done very well with a very low default rate, very low non-compliance rate. So I was really impressed. Take a look. Slide number 4, investing in commercial property. Well, you think that, or you know, that real estate prices for residential houses and condominiums have skyrocketed. It ain't nothing compared to what's happened with commercial property. In the millions of dollars for a storefront in downtown San Diego or some other area of the city, shopping centers, tens of millions of dollars. Just, it's insane the prices that they're getting. So for the vast majority of us, forget it. It isn't going to happen here in San Diego. Try a duplex, huh? Small apartment building. The rule of thumb is that you want to spend no more than about 7 to 10 times rent on a property. So in other words, if the property were, paying you $3,000 a month in rent, that's $36,000. You multiply that by 10, and that's $360,000. And it's very difficult to find a doghouse in San Diego that costs that much. So prices had become untouchable, simply insane. The 2008-2009 turmoil changed the investment landscape for real estate. And now prices are getting back to, and in some cases exceeding, the 2007 amounts. So maybe I should change that. Prices are just getting back. They have gotten back. In some cases, they now exceed that. I think the South Bay is where the great bargains are, if you are so inclined. But commercial property is, again, just very, very difficult. Get a job at a commercial property management company and learn about what it's like to get involved in commercial property and then buy something in Tucson or Nevada. How will that work for you? That's a problem. There's an old saying, I don't want to say the crude one, but never invest in rental property that you can't kick easily. You don't have to get on a plane or drive 7 hours. How about fixer-uppers, huh? Slide number 5. Well, again, concentrate on smaller properties first. Maybe a duplex. You could live in one, rent out the other. Then you know if there are parties going on at 2 a.m. in the morning. Look for low down payments and seller financing of rundown properties. Banks usually do not want a loan to distressed properties. However, banks are normally all too happy to finance a rundown foreclosure on their books during normal times. During the global financial crisis, the Great Recession, when real estate fell 50, 60, 70%, banks had hundreds, thousands of these things on their books, and they just couldn't get rid of them fast enough. That was a very difficult time. But that was a great opportunity for people to buy. So there you go. The time of maximum pessimism is the best time to buy. And I want to tell you, dear students, that I was personally a good contrarian. I've never tried to be a strong contrarian with regard to stocks. Every once in a while, when things are really bad, I'll throw some extra money in. But usually it's just every month comes out of a paycheck, out of a checking account. But when the global financial crisis hit, I turned to my wife and said, Anita, because that's her name, let's look at some properties. And years before, she had said, why don't we invest in real estate? Why are we investing in stocks? And I would always say, because it's too damn expensive. It's just too darn expensive. And we can't keep our own house standing, let alone another property. Well, the prices had fallen so low that I thought, and certainly the 7-to-10 time rule was in force for those few years, 2009, 10, 11, 12. And so I convinced her, yeah, let's do it. And I had no idea what I was doing. And that's why we really should have found a property manager. But instead, what we did is we have found very good plumber, a very good electrician, handyman, and who can help us. And if we find a very good handy woman, we'll use her also. Because I can't do anything. I can't fix a toilet. No. And my admonishment here at the very bottom of slide number 5 is to avoid property managers. Why? Because nobody cares about your property as much as you do. But of course, there are always exceptions. What I want you to do is learn to be a property manager first and then manage your own property. Because first of all, they want 10% of the rent. So right there, you know, well. And if they know what they're doing, it's not a whole lot of work for them. So you'll hear differently from the property managers. So talk to the property managers. But I think it's better for you, even if you have to play the part of the contractor like we do, where you have to be calling the plumber and the electrician and the handy people to fix things. I think it's a hell of a lot better deal. Personally, that's me. You decide. Now, where are we? Slide number 6. Most importantly, when it comes to renting out property, are you savvy dealing with repairs? Or do you have a good group with you who can do the jobs? And are you savvy dealing with renters? Because fixing a tenant is just as important, if not more important, than fixing that toilet. One bad tenant can set you back thousands of dollars in the Business 121 class. I should put it on the website here. There's a picture of somebody who moved their motorcycle into the living room and just tore the house apart with the motor, changed their oil in the, I thought, oh my goodness, change the oil in the living room. And that can happen. Thousands of dollars, one tenant. And I would ask students in the 121 class, when we get to real estate, any landlord horror stories? Because I thought that one took the cake. Somebody doing wheelies in their motorcycle in the living room on hardwood floors. And this one student said, well, my parents, this was back in Texas, my parents had a house for rent, and they rented it to two roommates. Okay. The one roommate killed the other roommate and then started a fire to try to hide the evidence. Yeah. even though a house fire gets up to 1,000 degrees, that's not enough to bury the evidence, folks. It takes 1,800 degrees to incinerate a person. And so, and when you start a fire, the fire department comes and puts out the fire and they find a dead body in the house. So that one takes the cake. Make improvements that add perceived value. For example, install a white picket fence because people love a white picket fence. I don't know why. This guy, read this guy. I mean, I'm an imbecile when it comes to fixing stuff, but I just love reading his books. Jay DeSima, Investing in Fixer Uppers. One house that was settling, and that's not unusual. Houses settled. Not necessarily bad for the house, but it does look a little lopsided. What did he do when he replaced the windows and doors? He tilted the windows and doors in the opposite direction so that now the house doesn't look like it's leaning. It's nothing new. That's what the engineers, the Italian engineers in Pisa did with the Leaning Tower of Pisa. If you look at it, at the top, you can see where they bent the top so that it, yeah, it didn't work out so well. Anyway, invest in Fixer Uppers. Now, let's take some time to talk about real estate investment trusts. Because these things actually do make sense, especially when you have learned and are practicing how to invest in stocks, because they look just like stocks. They trade on the exchanges. They have symbols. In fact, one of them that's based here in San Diego, if you can believe that, called Realty Income Corporation, has the symbol O. Now, I wouldn't want the symbol O myself because people can confuse it with a zero, but hey, it's one of those companies. There's another one called Kimco and then Simon Properties Group. There's not that many of them. And that's why when we discussed mutual funds and invest in REITs, the problem is that there's just not that many REITs, so you don't really get a whole lot of diversification. But the fact that the REIT owns many different properties does give you some measure of diversification. They typically concentrate, though. Some just invest in malls, some invest in apartment buildings, some invest in hotels, some invest in warehouses and office buildings. So you, just as you would with a stock, you have to investigate the real estate investment trust. And just like a mutual fund, the company, it's not a company, it's a trust. So it's not a corporation, so there's the laws are different, but it looks like a stock to us. They typically range around 1%, like a mutual fund, and some as high as 2%, depending on the company. Now, the long-term return has been about 7 or 8%, which is, you know, not bad. They typically don't have the growth potential of a stock, but that's okay. You're buying it for real estate, and you're buying it for income. Although sometimes when real estate explodes, real estate investment trusts normally do very well. They typically pay a dividend. Well, it's not legally a dividend. It's a little different, but it looks like a dividend to you and me, of around 6, 7%, 8%. Now, not so much. So check out Realty Income Corporation using Yahoo or Morningstar or MarketWatch and see that it, to you and me, it looks like a stock, so we can treat it like a stock. So there you are. You'll be a landlord without having to do any of the fixing a tenant, fixing a toilet, dealing with all the legal issues. It's a pass-through investment, like a mutual fund. What are some of the advantages of real estate investments? Well, it's been a great hedge against inflation, and people believe that inflation is going to rear its ugly head. Well, then maybe this is a good time, but prices are just outrageous. And then there's the use of borrowed funds for investment purposes, which allows you to acquire a more expensive property than you could on your own. There's that word again, leverage. And we'll take a look at leverage in action. For real estate partnerships, for REITs, there's easy entry. REITs are easily liquidated. Maybe not partnerships and limited partnerships and syndicates. And again, there's no management concerns. And one of the coolest things I always thought about real estate was that you can't check the price of your real estate investments every day on the internet. Well, actually, now you can. And people do. Check out Zillow and Trulia. And I don't trust these places. Not the least of which is because the real estate agents absolutely hate them, but also because it's just, when it comes down to actually selling the place, there's a lot of negotiation coming into the play. But they're doing their best. They're using the publicly available information about real estate transactions, and they have an algorithm. I like Zillow. They call it their Zestimate, or maybe it's Zestimate. I don't know. I call it Zestimate. And you can check the price of your... Don't do it. Don't do it. What are the disadvantages? Well, liquidity. As we said way back in chapter one, real estate is the poster child for poor liquidity. It may be hard to sell your property or your share of the property if it's a partnership. It may be very easy. Some days, especially right before the global financial crisis, you put a for sale sign on Thursday, and by Saturday you got 5 offers, and Sunday you signed. And now what I hear is there's 46 offers. So in this case, liquidity is not a problem for those selling. For those buying, it's a nightmare. Normally, there's a lack of diversification because you might only have one property or two, whereas if you have a REIT, you have several. We talked about the real estate syndicates and the passive tax shelters. And then the management and tenant problems, what I call the PDEF factor, or actually I got it from the gentleman who wrote The Wealthy Barber, David Chilton, and I wish I had made it up, but I didn't. And then property values can decline. Oh, yes, they can. I remember people back in the mid-2000s saying, property values will never decline. Property values will never decline. And I kept saying, oh, yes, they can. They've had in the past. And sure enough, they did. Oh, boy, did they. And they will in the future. Someday there's going to be another bubble. It looks like we're getting close, but I don't know. We certainly have a demand-supply imbalance in California. Now, how about your home? And when people say, well, what about real estate? And when I'm talking about stocks, I say, but you may wind up buying a home, in which case you will have some diversification in real estate just because you have a home. For most people, it's their largest asset. As we said, it's typically a good hedge against inflation. Traditionally, a home produces an after-inflation return of about 2.5%. San Diego, no. San Diego's been far higher than 2.5%. Those of you lucky enough to buy, not during the bubble of the mid-2000s, and maybe not during the bubble today, but have gotten much better than 2.5%. And there are very good tax advantages. If you are single, you can sell your house with a $250,000 capital gain, which means you bought it for $100,000, you sold it for $350,000, or whatever. Bought it for $200,000, sold it for $450,000. If you're married, double that and not pay any capital gains. If you have a capital loss, sorry, you can't deduct the capital loss. It's a home first and investment second, in my humble opinion, but you will hear otherwise, usually real estate agents. But those are pretty cool tax advantages. If you never plan to sell, they won't help you, but if you do, think about it. But my house is the best investment I ever made. This is what you hear from people when you start talking about investments and home. And I say, well, you know, homes are great, but there are better investments out there. And you ask them, you know, oh, yeah, well, it's pretty much the only investment I ever made. Except for that penny stock my brother-in-law, the ex-stockbroker, conned me into buying. But that stuff is worthless now. And those gold coins I bought way back when the first Gulf War started, back in 1991. What'd I do with those things anyway? I hope they're in the safety deposit box. Look, dear students, in my humble opinion, a house is a home first and investment second. But again, you're going to hear other opinions, typically real estate agents, who say, no, you're going to buy here, and then in a few years, that area is going to appreciate really high, and then you'll sell, and then buy over here, where that place will appreciate even faster, and then you're going to buy in a few more years, and every time that you buy and sell, this person's going to make a commission. So we'll think about who's telling you that. But what about San Diego, huh, Frank? What about San Diego? Well, prices have gone down in the past. They will go down again sometime in the future, even though they're sizzling currently. But if you plan on making San Diego your home, by all means, buy whatever you can afford reasonably afford. San Ysidro, National City are two of the best values in the region, and people say, oh my God, you live in San Ysidro, National City, yeah, yeah. I say, oh yeah, they're terrible places. It's just dangerous. They have cars and kids and shopping centers and houses. It's a very unsafe place. Imperial Beach is also a great beach value if you're looking for the beach. But look, it's not a secret. California has a housing supply and demand imbalance. We need, there's estimates range from 3.5 million, which I think is a little much, but at least 1 million to 2 million units over the next 10 or so years. And housing is just very difficult to get started these days. The developers are not too happy about having to build medium-sized, low-income, and medium housing. They want to build high-income because they can't build that much, and that's the money they can make the most money off the high-end houses. So it's a dilemma, and I hope we can, as a citizenry, as a community, as a civilization, get together and build more houses. What do we have to do? Well, in many places, we have to go up. And that's against our culture. We don't want to be like Miami. We don't want to have these places right up against the beach that are high rises. Well, we don't have to do that. We don't have to build right by the beach. We can work it out. There's a group called YIMBY, Yes in My Backyard. And they've made some boneheaded maneuvers, but they also have their hearts are in the right place and they want to build. So let's work it out, right? Let's talk. And then you hear other people saying, oh, the traffic. Well, the traffic is an issue. Yes, we got to deal with it. We've got to find some way to get people out of their cars. I don't know how it's going to happen. I do have some hope for driverless cars where you just don't use a car. You call up this car, it takes you where you want to go, then it goes and takes somebody else, which will result in fewer cars on the road, because think about it. How often do you use your car, really? I mean, you don't use it that often. Most of the time, it's sitting parked. Wouldn't it be great if it were always on the move, taking people where they need to go? Because it sure doesn't look like we can get people to use the buses. I know I do when I can, and the trolley when I can, but for the most part, I want to be able to get from point A to point B, and it doesn't mean easily using public transit because it would take me 2.5 hours as opposed to an hour or a half hour to go by car. This is a sign that I saw back 1993, folks. My goodness, that's almost 30 years. Please, God, let there be another real estate boom, and I promise I won't piss it all away this time. You see, from the late 70s and into 1999, real estate in California moved in two directions, up and way up. And then there was a recession in 1990-91. And it was very brutal for California. A lot of companies left California because of the cost of real estate. And sure enough, many houses fell in price. And this person obviously had pissed it all away. And you wonder if she did the same thing in 2007 and 8. I don't know because I lost track, but I just had to remember that sign above her desk. It was beautiful. It's up in North County. Come on, Payano, admit it. Real estate is the perfect investment. Look at what happened in the past 5 years. This is what you heard from people in 2005 and 6. Beware the permanent trend. Remember that? Real estate goes up and down in cycles. Ask those who bought in 1990 and sold in 94 when they lost 25%. And those who bought the flipper condo in 2006 and lost everything when they went through foreclosure. But if you plan to hold on for the long term, you should do well. It's not as though San Diego is becoming less desirable to live in, especially if you've ever been to Buffalo, New York, or Youngstown, Ohio. And I'm not trying to badmouth those places, but those winters are cruel. Humans weren't designed to live in these kind of climates. I don't know how we've survived this long there. And by the way, I hope that what you've seen throughout the semester is that there is no perfect investment. You know, no investment is perfect. Every investment has advantages. Every investment has disadvantages. risks and returns. And that is what, if anything, we want you to come away with, that you have to analyze, dig deep, consult the experts if you need to, and realize that nothing's perfect, nothing we humans have ever done. And this is what people were saying in stocks during the dot-com bubble of the late 1990s. Stocks are the perfect investment. Blue skies, productivity gains. Years didn't work out so well. But what about leverage, huh? What about the ability to make money with other people's money? That's a big deal with real estate. Oh, we've already discussed leverage, haven't we? But isn't that what makes real estate such a great investment? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, that's why when we discuss the long-term results, the long-term returns of various investments back in chapter one, the real estate people say, no, Piano's not really discussing it. He's not comparing apples to apples. And I told you I wasn't, because of leverage. But there are pitfalls. Just as with margining stocks, leveraging real estate magnifies your gain and magnifies your losses. Now, there's a worksheet that we would pass out in the face-to-face class. Go check it out. But here it is, basically, on slide number 16. These are from a financial planning book that we used to use for Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management, way back circa 2004, 2005. And this is while the housing bubble was percolating. Calculating the return on investment. I didn't change it. I usually have silly names, but they just used a guy named Dave. So Dave bought a rental property for $200,000 cash. That's not how we typically buy properties, but that's what's going on now. And these are people with a lot of money, or they are private equity firms, hedge funds, whatever you want to call them, predatory capitalists, vulture capitalists. These takeover artists, they've got tons of money and they're buying properties cash. But mostly Dave, or you and I, we don't buy things with cash. But 1 year later, he sold it for $240,000. And this is what was going on. People were putting a down payment of $30,000, $40,000 in a condo, and then it wasn't even built yet. 9 months later, when it was built and ready to be sold, they sold it for $40,000 more than what they paid for it. So what was his return on a $200,000 investment? Well, if you take the $240,000 minus the $200,000, that's $40,000 absolute dollar return. Divide that by your initial investment of $20,000 and $200,000, and you get a 20% return on investment. It cost us $200,000 to make $400,000. But if we only put down 10%. And this is what they were doing. They were letting people put down 10, 20% on a rental property. Not a good idea. If he only put down 10% of his own money and borrowed 90%, so he put down $20,000, borrowed $180,000, what was his subsequent return? Well, the dollar return, absolute dollar return, has not changed. We paid $200,000 and sold it for $240,000. But this time we only brought to the table, that's the verb, the saying you will hear people say. We only brought $20,000 to the table. $40,000 divided by $20,000 is 2. 200%! Quick, run down, they're giving away free money! As Mr. J.P. Morgan said, one of the worst things that can happen to your personal finance is to see your neighbor getting rich. And so you wanted that too. And it was great while the music was playing, while real estate was going up 10, 20% a year. But then the music stopped playing. Whoops, what happened to the other one's gone. I have to put the other one in there. The other one shows you what happens when the price goes down. I'm going to have to put that slide at the end. Okay, I'll sneak it in at the end. My apologies. You'll have to run to the end of the presentation, and then you'll see the other slide. My apologies. But what happens is it goes down 20%, and then Dave has a real problem. My apologies. I'll get it in there. Don't worry. Wait a minute. Did you say there are no capital gains taxes on real estate? Well, that's true. As the law stands now, for your primary residence, as long as it's been your primary residence for 2 out of the last 5 years, you pay no capital gains on the first $250,000 if you're single, $500,000 if you're married. So there are people who are literally doing this. They are buying a house, living in it, fixing it up. They usually have a day job, but they're handy with plumbing and floors and walls, and they can do all kinds of handyman, handywoman stuff. And then after 2 years, they can sell it capital gains tax-free. Difficult in San Diego because of the competition, but other parts of the country, no, this is something that's very valuable. And as we said, if you lose money on your primary residence, sorry, it's not tax deductible. So you buy a home for $200,000, maybe somewhere crashed up in Arkansas, and then turn it into a mansion, sell it for $700,000. And if you're married, no capital gains taxes. But you have to be careful. It has to be your primary residence. There's a well-celebrated case where a couple that had a house in Wisconsin, one in Florida, and one in Arizona. And these people were very well off, and they just rotated between all three places. When they went to sell one, they said, it's our primary residence. And the IRS said, no, it's not. You don't have a primary residence. And there are certain tests that you have to fulfill. So be careful and talk to a lawyer if you're in that situation. So have you seen the ads? Start your real estate empire with no money down. You too can take advantage of the tremendous opportunities now in the wide open real estate foreclosure market. Just buy our guaranteed surefire real estate investment kit for $395, or take our 5-day course for $3,995. And there's some bozo, and there's an article where a guy, some celebrity on unreality television, wants to sell you a seminar for only $37,000. That's going to pay for itself. In the next 3 months, you won't have to worry about mortgaging your house. You'll be on your way toward riches beyond your wildest dreams. No comment necessary. So now, buy a house, make it your home. After you have digested that purchase, then look for some rental property. But learn as much as you can from folks who are already doing it, dear students. Maybe even working for a property manager for a spell to get the feel for what you will need to be able to do. And now I promise you, I'm going to stop this, and then I'm going to put that slide, which should have been the other slide, I'm going to put that up on there and show you what happened to thousands, tens of hundreds of thousands of people when the property values stop going up and then start going down. So thank you again, as always, for being in our class. And if you're really interested in real estate, think about it. Work for a real estate company in some way. You'll learn the ropes, and you'll learn that it's tricky, which is a fancy way of saying it's a real pain in the ass. You earn every dime, dear students, every dime. Okay, my apologies. This should have been slide 17, so I'm putting this at the end of the presentation. And this is what happens when things don't go as planned. Suppose Dave invested only $20,000 of his money, borrowed $180,000, and the property value went down 20%. Remember, in the great financial global crisis of 2008 and 2009, the Great Recession, prices in East Chula Vista and other parts that had been run up so grandly had gone down 50% or more. So now he lost $40,000 on the price. So now prices are $160,000. But he put up $20,000. So that $20,000 is gone. He still owes $180,000. If he were to sell it now, he would have to come up with $20,000 to pay off the bank. Or he'd have to go to the bank and say, can I do a short sale? And if he does a short sale, that means the bank forgives the $20,000. He has to pay taxes on that. A forgiven loan is considered by the IRS to be income. He is negative, he has negative equity. He is underwater. So what's he going to tell his wife? That's the real question. Honey, we have a problem. Yes, this one was conveniently left out of the book. Leverage magnifies your gains and magnifies your losses. Excuse me. Yeah.